Okay. Welcome back. Had a nice lunch break? Was it a good lunch? Some people still haven't recovered from the good lunch. But tomorrow's Kaddish. Excuse me, Sunday's Kaddish. Okay, if you're all over this thing. Sunday's Kaddish. So if you need to want to get to Kaddish on Sunday. Okay, are we ready to focus? Everybody's ready to settle down and so this morning session, what was our topic? Accessing the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. Accessing the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. So that we can access the holy name. Because to be accessed to the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, one gets access to the holy name. And access to the holy name helps us permanently enhance our relationship with the holy name. It's all connected with that theme. The primary way that we introduced that topic, accessing the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, was the song by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Gurudev Kripa Bindu Diya, which is Bhaktivinoda Thakur's rendering of the third verse of Shikshastakam. And we pay special attention to terms that come from that song that correspond with Amamina Mahadena. We hear more. I mean, I'm accustomed to hearing more about humility, more humble than a blade of grass, more tolerant than a tree. We don't hear as much about ready to offer all respect to others without any expectation of respect in return. But we spend some time on that. We're going to spend some more time on that in relation to today's topic, or this afternoon's topic. Attracting Krishna's attention. So just to focus again and a little refresh. Sakale Samana. Sakale Samana. In the word for word, it's translated as honoring all living beings. Sakale Samana. Bhaktivinoda Thakur is praying for the power I mentioned. A cultured person has some idea at least of the importance of honoring people and how to honor people in their different positions. Sakale Samana. But he's asking for the empowerment to do so, to follow through with what we know is right and to do it in all circumstances of life. In Shikshastakam, this is more of an educational point, Mana Dena is the corresponding term. Mana Dena, giving respect to all. Mana Dena, giving respect to all. That's in the word for word. And commonly Prabhupada would recite it as being prepared to give all respect to others. Mana Dena. Sakala Samana. Offering respect. And the other term is not wishing to have respect for oneself. Nitya mane spriha hina. Nitya mane is, as far as personal honor is concerned, or in regards to personal honor, spriha hina, being free from all desires for personal honor. I can say in my service as a sannyasi and using the conventional term of pastoral counseling or counseling or, you know, extending devotee care to devotees, this is an issue for a lot of people. They feel they weren't respected, or they feel they were disrespected, but they were expecting respect. They got either a zero or a minus. They didn't get the plus. They wanted the plus. They wanted respect. And then there's a relationship issue between that person and another person. They were disrespected or didn't get respect, and kind of aggravates it as others were honored that I wasn't honored. Unequal treatment or something like that. Amani na, Prabhupada translates word for word as without being puffed up by false pride. Amani na, without being puffed up with false pride, or does not expect personal honor. Now, the context of this, one more time, is these two plus the other two, so these four: humility, tolerance, willing to offer all respects to others, never expecting respect in return. These are four qualities that if one possesses them, one can chant the holy name of the Lord constantly. And you can only do something constantly if there's some taste, so it refers to taste, getting taste. Not just, you know, chanting, but taste and chanting. That's fine. They're already a third verse in Chief Chastakam, they're already at a high position. That's accessing Lord Chaitanya's mercy. If we, so to connect with our theme for the retreat, if we do these, offering all respect, sapale samana, and nija mani srihagina, we can do that, we can permanently enhance our loving relationship with the Holy Name and Krishna. And according to the song, one can become, Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes, one can become free from offense. That's good enough. We're at the stage when you're prompt of, you're right with love of God. No offense. What's the flip side? Supposing you don't. Supposing, you know, just go along chanting and don't make this effort. Don't call for Guru and Krishna's mercy for that descending empowerment, the strength, the shakti to do these two things and to, you know, avoid the one thing and do the other thing. Well, we'll commit offenses. We'll go on chanting and commit offenses and not have a taste and, you know, and then all of the other corollary things that happen with that. We whine and complain, and we find fault with others. The reason is, you know, he's like this and she's like that. It's not me, it's them. And when we become captured in Maya, in envy and the fault finding, I happen to notice it's a pretty full little basket over here. Complaints about other people. I'm glad I took it seriously and, you know, wrote them down. leave them there. And when we start doing those things mentioned, then very quickly, like 1-2, or 1-1, it goes to disrespecting Krishna and our, because it's directly connected to our relationship with Krishna. If we're not connected with Krishna, we're going to see these things in others, faults in others, and so forth and so on. And that means, as conditioned souls, until we're at that stage of Shuddha Bhakti, chanting Shuddha Nam, these things are in our hearts. The desire for respect, and not being prepared to offer respect to everyone. Because that's the translation. Giving respect to all, manadeva. Honoring all the beings. Sakala samana. So it's inside. And we don't want it to be inside. If we want to go closer in our relationship with Krishna, we want it to be friends. So humility, the same sequence, is there. And necessity for mercy. Kripa bindu diya. Necessity for mercy. And then surrender to Krishna. I'm going to narrate two pastimes, Aristasura's being killed by Krishna, and Kesha's being killed by Krishna, because they connect directly with this theme. The Kesha demon represents the desire for respect. And when one is desiring respect, whether one is qualified or not, one positions oneself as if I am superior, therefore you should respect me. And those that are superior, well, I feel envious toward those that are superior. And therefore my business is to point out their shortcomings, rather than see their volumes and volumes and volumes of service in there. Even if you try to serve Krishna, I see their shortcomings. It's like that letter that one lady wrote to Srila Prabhupada saying, Swamiji, you've done great work all over the world, you're spreading Krishna consciousness, and it's just miraculous what you're doing. But some of your members, they don't represent you well. And they're giving ISKCON a bad name. They're giving you a bad name because of their conduct. So Prabhupada wrote back, thank you very much. It's very kind. All the mercy of my spiritual master. Just carrying out the instructions of my spiritual master is his grace. This child that likes to talk needs to find another place. I bet you can help them find another place. See you later. Okay, so, and then thank you very much for your appreciation, because that is all the credit goes to my Guru Maharaj, who very kindly gave me this service and just carrying out his order. And as far as my disciples are concerned, please consider them like a person who's taking a shower. They recognize they're not clean. They're in the shower to make themselves clean. So appreciate that they're in the shower to make themselves clean. And by doing so, they'll become clean. Thank you very much for your kind words. So as Prabhupada was writing to this lady, we should see, and as we read the Adosha Darshi, Adosha is without faults. Darshi, one doesn't see the faults. There's this nice discussion between Kamal Krishna Maharaj and Srila Prabhupada. Where Prabhupada was, he was asking Prabhupada the difference between calling a spade a spade. You've heard that term? Not heard that term? Calling a spade a spade. You know, you tell it like it is. You'd be American, you know, or New Yorker, just like in your face. Call a spade a spade. You're a nonsense, you know. Call a spade a spade. Hard loss like that phrase. You're a nonsense. And fault finding and criticizing. What's the difference between the three? And so Prabhupada, the reply to the calling a spade a spade first, he said, for example, he said something like, I'd like to look it up. You're more important than a fig. Like that, it's just fact. What are the other two? You know, the position of the spiritual master, the disciple, may say something like that that's just so blunt. You think that you're very important, but you're not so important. That's just a fact. You're a tiny, insignificant living entity. That's just a fact. And as if it's a fact, this word tiny, insignificant living entity. Keshi is one who I want respect. So I think trying to make myself big. And anybody else that's big, I want to make them look small. You know, all that stuff over there. Some scriptural references, in addition to the past time that I'm going to narrate. In Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's Madhurya Kadambini, it's a book that describes. Did I keep that here? Yes. In Seattle, one Thanksgiving. So it describes the 9 stages of bhakti. And I believe it's chapter 3. It's describing the stage of anarjana vritti. Anarjana vritti, the eradication of impurities. And in that chapter, it discusses the best means for eradication of impurities is chanting. And there's offenses again, or there's stages in chanting. There's offenses, and there's stages in offenses against chanting. In any case, unsteadiness in bhakti, anishtita bhakti, can be caused by being, one of the final ones is being a little successful in spiritual life. And then I try to, the tendency, the fruitive tendency to be the enjoyer of that little success. Labha, puja, and pratishtha are the Sanskrit terms. One covets, I desire, I get happiness from obtaining respect and worship and position, pratishtha. I'm a sannyasi. I'm a temple president. I'm da 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 da. Even if it's like I'm a chief pot washer or something. Some respect. Because I'm a little, now I'm a little successful in my spiritual life. And that's a cause of unsteadiness in bhakti. It's a contamination that covers pure bhakti. Or, in another place where he's describing unsteady bhakti, taranga rangini is the final. And it's where, similarly, ranga means wave, like rangana. He's the lord of the waves. He's riding in the milk ocean. On an Antishesha. And he's the lord of the waves. He's Ranganath. And Rangini is diminutive, small waves. And Taranga is riding the small waves. Taranga Rangini. A little success and I'm search stuff and I'm trying to be the enjoyer of my good success. It's a cause of unsteadiness. It's a type of contamination. So keshi is that contamination. And it's a towards the end, when one is a little successful, some of you never take up devotional service. But if one does and has stayed on in devotional service for some time, one is expecting that the contamination is, one is expecting something, some recognition. One can say, well, it's only natural. And one can also say, it's only a contamination. It's not something that a Vaishnava looks forward to. It's something that one who has a contamination looks forward to. A very nice example that comes to mind is Madhavendra Puri, who is the spiritual master of Ishwara Puri, who is the spiritual master of Lord Chaitanya. Madhavendra Puri, when he went on behalf of his deity, Gopal, although he was sent from Vrindavan to get sandalwood and camphor because his body was hot. So he went to Puri. On his way to Puri, he stopped at Ramuna. He saw the deity of Gopinath, who is known as Chirapura Gopinath. He steals the Kira. But before that, it was just Gopinath. But Gopinath stole the Kira from Madhavendra Puri. When Madhavendra Puri saw that this is famous, they make wonderful Kira. I'd like to taste some of that so I can tell from tasting it how they made it, so I can make some for my deity Gopal. But it was before it was offered. The pujari was just bringing it out, putting it on the altar. Well, I made an offense. So he stayed for the RT. He then left and went to the marketplace feeling, I'm a big offender. But Gopinath stole the sweetness, put it behind his cloth in the middle of the night, at midnight, 1 o'clock, whatever. He woke up the pujari. Wake up! I stole some sweet rice, some kheer, from Madhavendra Puri. You'll find it. You didn't notice it. I covered you with my yoga maya potency. It's right behind my cloth. Now go take your bath, get the kheer, and find Madhavendra Puri in the marketplace. Pujari was astonished. Took his bath, put on a fresh cloth, went to the, took his key, opened up a gate because no one could get in. And sure enough, there was a kid behind the deity. So he went out into the marketplace. He didn't know who Madhavendra Puri was. He was just calling out, Madhavendra Puri! Gopinath has stolen the sweet rice from you. You're the most fortunate person in the universe. Madhavendra Puri! Where are you? Madhavendra Puri heard him calling and accepted the kheer and the loving reciprocation of Gopinath, drank the kheer, broke the pieces of the pot and put it in his cloth, and then thought, I have to leave, because when people wake up and they hear about this happening, they'll want to come and offer me respect. I don't want that. So he left. In the middle of the night, he left. Because he didn't want respect. That's Madhavendra Puri. And then there's the rest of us. We want respect. At least Keshi-ness within us wants respect. Daksha wanted respect. He was really good at performing yajnas. But then he had his brother-in-law, Lord Shiva, that was respected more than him. And he didn't do yajnas. And he was a yajna fan, so he thought, this isn't right. So he disrespected him. Because, in order to make myself, this is envy, the nature of envy. Somebody created a beast, doesn't make them look less than me, I have to pull them down. vilification of a lifestyle. And that's a sense because of the contamination of wanting to respect. And then pride comes into the heart when one wants respect. Some little something, whatever that little something is. Prabhupada taught even a pauper is proud of his penny. Told a little story about it. So even somebody that has nothing is proud of that whatever that something is that's really nothing. Negligible. It's the nature of material contamination. And once again, that contamination is within our heart. Pride goeth before the fall. You've heard that phrase? Pride goeth before the fall. Before somebody falls, there's pride. Before there's pride, they wish to have respect. So, in chapter 18, that's the very last chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Krishna Vashanam Tava, just like you heard this morning. Arjuna had come to the position of completely accepting what Krishna had said. But at the very beginning of that same chapter, he addresses Krishna by the name, first verse of chapter 18, Keshi Nusudana, the killer of the Keshi demon. This tendency to, now that I've received your mercy and your instructions, now I'm going to get proud. Like Sudama, the Brahmin. When he left Krishna's palace in Dwarka, he was thinking, Krishna's very kind. He didn't even ask me why I came to see him. Although he knew, he didn't ask me. Because if he asked me, I'm a Brahmin, I'd have to tell him, and I would have told him that I came to get something from you. And then Krishna would have given that something, and then I would have become proud. Oh, I'm very special. Krishna's given me something. So Krishna didn't even ask me. Krishna is so kind. Pride goes before the fall. Nalakuvera and Manigriva, they became so degraded because they were proud. Worse ones of Kuvera. He's the treasure of heaven. And besides that, he's very dear to Lord Shiva. And we're his son. And we're dear to Lord Shiva too. Pride makes one fall. So in the now the topic for this afternoon, accessing or receiving Krishna's mercy. So these two demons, Arishtasura and Keshi, we're going to hear something more about them. Arishtasura represents the presentation of one who is not connected to Krishna, but presents himself as a religious person. You know, man-made religions. There's lots of them. As opposed to the Dharma, Ghi, Sakshat, Bhagavat, Pranitam kind. He says somebody makes up something. There's lots of them. In India, in America, all over the world, there's so many. Those who display seeking religion or that tendency, that's Arishta. And in order to attract people's attention, pomp and splendor, without naming names, there's no need to do that. You can all think of the ones that you know nearest to you when you grew up or something like that. People that are into those things, they don't need to name names. And in order to really promote it, that which is genuinely connecting one to Krishna has to be poo-poo. You have to criticize. That's not good because. Like, Krishna's bad because he got the gopis. And that's in religious, and so Krishna's bad. Or something like that. There was once an article in a newspaper think it was Australia, and they brought the newspaper articles and called this a very bad press for Islam. He said, Christian's bad. And Prabhupada started reading the article. Just see, 26 times they said Christian's name. This is very good. Because they're demons, they're saying like Shishupal. Krishna is bad. It's good for Shishupal because he got purified by saying Krishna's name. We should act in such a way we're above criticism at the same time knowing there will be a person who will criticize. What does Krishna say in Bhagavad Gita in chapter 18, the last instruction? Krishna, not the International Society for God Consciousness, but Krishna Consciousness. Kind of one of those peace and decorous things, you know, conservative and liberal things these days is when reaching out to different communities of people that if we just say Krishna, they may back off. So we don't say Krishna, we say something else. No, the Supreme. I had that challenge when I go to China because without too much detail. Especially in public, in Dodi circles it's not a problem, but in public venues, like, you know, they take us to sometimes to a yoga studio, yoga place. So they have their rules. You know, no religion. You can talk spirituality. I've been instructed. Spirituality, ethics, values, okay. God, no. Krishna, forget it. Then you have to teach things that's like indirect. It's challenging. But that's China because the government has its things. But then we try to reach different communities sometimes. We don't want to, quote, put people off, so we don't say Krishna. Although we chant Hare Krishna, we just don't tell them what Hare Krishna is. Some people can do that, I don't know. But dharma, the Bhagavatam is very clear. Dharma, Prodhita, Taita, Rotra. Paramo, Yirmasadam, Satam. And that's what the teachings of Lord Chaitanya are resting upon is Srimad Bhagavatam. In this pastime of Arisha, and I'll highlight it when we go along. Actually, I'm doing this deliberately. I'm kind of like doing it backwards. I thought about it. I could just narrate the pastime and then tell you here's some elements within the pastime. I'm doing it backwards. There's a purpose for Krishna performing these pastimes for conditioned souls. That's us, by the way. It helps us to have obstacles removed, like the Arishta obstacle tendency and the Keshi obstacle tendency from our hearts. Just hearing the pastimes will have that effect. Will help us get access to Krishna. What to speak of the residents of Vrindavan and how they deal with Arishta and Keshi. When Arishta appeared, you'll hear the details. Everyone was terrified. He was this huge, this roaring, gigantic beast, tearing up the place with his horns and scaring everybody with his roaring and his horns. And so they just called Krishna's name. They didn't even say anything more than that. They just called his name. Krishna, Krishna. And immediately Krishna came. Just like that. Just like what we call Krishna, Krishna. Krishna's there immediately. And he says, Ma Bahishta. Ma is don't, negative. Don't be afraid. And just by Krishna saying, don't be afraid, like Ma Suchaha. Ma Bahishta. Immediately. their fear was gone. Because all it took was Krishna to say, don't be afraid. I mean, mothers with your children, if you tell your children, don't be afraid, maybe they might be afraid. But the residents of Vrindavan just hearing Krishna say, Mahavishya. It's all it took. By calling so Krishna, the relationship with Krishna, this is getting back to the theme of the retreat. The relationship with Krishna is not different than our relationship with the holy name. So when we're chanting, sometimes we may feel something like this, that Krishna's not there, or something like that. But of course Krishna's there, because he's not different than his name. It's not that Krishna's not there, we're not there. We're just being mechanical chanters rather than calling Krishna to take shelter of his loving service. Well, the Kaitava Dharma thing that the Bhagavatam speaks about, that wanting the kingdom of God without God. And I invite you to be a sannyasi for a while and see, you know, what the variety of stuff that's out there. It's really an abundant variety of nonsense. Another one of Paramahansa's favorite phrases, nonsense. The spiritual marketplace is filled with nonsense. And people, you know, accept nonsense as genuine, and genuine as nonsense. Or something that, you know, they can't relate with. Or something like that. It's very unfortunate. It's coming ego. People's minds are spinning out of control. Meet some young Western people, or, you know, modern Indian people. They're all over the place too. All over the place. Made it very, very difficult. This materialistic religion, by the way, that's a contradiction in terms. Materialistic religion. Kaitava Dharma, cheating religion. There's no submission to Krishna, but there is strong fastidious attachment to stuff. Like, you know, in Christian books, it's Satyajit. He was an ardent worshipper of the sun god. Boy, was he into it for hours every day. He would, you know, mantras and make offerings and hang out his Shamataka jewel. And so he just completely forgot Krishna. It was like, here I come. Here comes the tragedy. I can wear my Shamataka jewel around my neck. Completely ignoring Krishna. Caused him a lot of trouble. He lost his life. He lost his brother, and then he lost his life. And after Arishna was killed by Krishna, we're going to hear about Kamsa. And the plan making of Kamsa. I'm mentioning this ahead of time, so when you're hearing the narration, you'll get it. You know, I could maybe repeat some of it afterwards, but I don't think we're going to tell it. So, let's just start like this. Can we do the lights in this end of the room? Somebody knows how to do that. I hope you can read it. This is Bhaktivinoda Thakur. This is giving you a background to why I'm narrating and why Krishna is performing these pastimes. From Sri Caitanya Shikshamrita, Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes, Krishna's activities are of two types, Nitya, Leela, and Nayanatika, Leela. Nitya is eternal pastimes, and Nayatika is occasional pastimes. So Nitya Leela we know. Same as in the spiritual world, Krishna performs here. Then there's occasional pastimes. He gives some examples. Krishna leaving Vrindavan to live in Mathura and Dwarka. In Goloka, Krishna doesn't leave. In Gokula, Krishna leaves. Or his killing of demons. In Goloka, there's no demons. In Gokula, there's demons. Or another one is Krishna's birth. In Goloka, there's no birth pastime. In Gokula, there's a birth pastime. It's because we have sensibility. What's the question of Krishna, you know, running around being the son of Nanda and Yashoda? He isn't not born. Would work. So there's a legal way for him. And it's a very deep subject if you have another hour and go into it. It happens in the spiritual world seemingly. There's a problem. Mother Yashoda thinks Krishna was born as my son. It's a bhava. It's not a viva, it's a bhava. To move, Krishna's my son. There's a bhava that there's demons, although there's no demons. In one literature, I forget which one, it describes like this as an example. Suddenly in Goloka, someone, an unknown, no one has seen this someone before, comes running through Vrindavan and calls out, Arishasura is coming, watch out! Run for him, here comes Arishasura! There's no Arishasura. The person just disappears, as mysteriously as they appear. But everyone thinks, oh, Arishasura is coming, Krishna, please help. It's a bhava. Not a lila. Here there's a lila. And a lila, Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes, these Nayatika lilas are very useful for aspiring devotee who is bound within the material world. That's us. Especially for us. Practicing devotees, sadhakas, understand these occasional pastimes to be negatively tinted reflections of the eternal pastimes. Again, that's a deep subject. Vidrama Vilas is how Bhaktisiddhanta describes it. Vilas is another word for pastime. It's a special word that means like very intimate pastime. And Vidrama, V-H-R-A-M-A. That means mistake. Nidra means very mistaken pastimes. One thinks, although there isn't demons. One thinks there's a birth, although there's no birth. And other things. One thinks there's marriages, although there's no marriages. The gopis, it's a long subject. Long subject. Read text 37 in Sri Brahma Samhita. You have a dictionary. It's 12 pages long and it explains what I just mentioned. But we'll be discussing it when I come again in Sanskrit, so whether you have your dictionary or not, whether you're being described. So, such sincere devotees, that's you, hope that by the influence of understanding the purpose of Krishna's performance of different occasional pastimes, their own various anarthas, or unwanted material contaminations, will be destroyed. But we need to understand the purpose, and we're going to describe the purpose. By remembering these pastimes, devotees aspire to destroy their own demoniac mentalities and tendencies. We can come to the stage of unmixed devotion by Krishna performing these pastimes, or hearing Krishna, about Krishna performing these pastimes by reading Krishna book, by reading Srimad Bhagavatam, by reciting them, by remembering them, and so forth, by coming to a Japa retreat and hearing about them. We know from Shikshasaka by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the second one, begins Nam Nam Kali Bhagavan Jastar Shakti. No, just that part. The first is Nam Namakari Bhagavad. Krishna has many names, Bhagavad, such as Krishna Bhagavad, etc. And Nidya Sarva Shakti. In each and every one of these names, there's innumerable potencies. Now, each of the names of Krishna has specific potencies, just like chapter 1, Bhagavad Gita. Those of you that have read chapter 1, you know sometimes Arjuna addresses Krishna as Hrishikesh, or Janardana, or Madhusudana. And each of those names invokes some aspect of Krishna, because Krishna is everything. So as in each of the names, like this chapter 18, first verse, Keshi Nusudana, these pastimes also have potencies. And by hearing the pastimes, it's invoking those potencies, the aspect of Krishna, which helps overcome some impurities within us. He performs the pastime for us. And so we're narrating it. And we'll start with the Arishta demon, false religion, very proud and arrogant, and ostentatious and showing off with pomp and splendor, and wanting the real center of religion to be destroyed. He's a mega personification of that tendency. So the pastime begins in the spring. Midway through the period of dusk. So dusk, so that the calculation is something like from 8:20 to 10:35 by solar calculation. That's the period of the day. In the evening time. Midway through the period of dusk. But Krishna was eager to perform a rasa dance near Govardhan Hill. Arishtasura had me approach the Tamar village, barreling, terrifying everyone, tearing up the banquet of the fields of the schools. A crazy bull eager to fight. The demon Arishta, sent by Kamsa, came to the cowherd village, appearing in the form of a bull with a large trunk. He made the earth tremble as he tore it apart with his tools. Here's a description of his appearance. He had a complexion of a cloud and had sharp horns and eyes blazing like the sun. He repeatedly licked his lips with a loud sound. He twirled his tail and cried. His shoulders, can't read it, tough. And his trunk was huge and impossible to pass over. His body was smeared with green stool. He caused panic in the cows. Skin hung from his throat. His face was scarred by being hit by trees. He always wandered in the forest to attack sages, doing austerities. He wasn't a nice person. He wandered through the Vrindavan village, breaking everything. With anger, he attacked the cows with his horns. The domestic animals fled Raja out of fear. Rishi was not satisfied, since he could not fight. Look how big he is. That's a river. Clouds hovered about, shot horned Rishi's hump, mistaking it for a mountain. And when the cowed men and maidens caught sight of the demon, they were struck with terror indeed. The strident reverberation was roar, so frightened the pagan cows and women that they lost their fetuses in this carriage. This is the gopis seeing Krishna coming down the trail, and they immediately embrace the tamal trees, calling out Krishna's name for protection. The situation became very terrible, and all the inhabitants of Vrindavan began to cry. Krishna, Krishna. The commentary says they didn't say anything else, like please save us or anything. They just called his name. That's all. When the Supreme Lord saw the cowherd community distraught and fleeing in fear, he calmed them, saying, what did he say? Mahavrishta. Don't be afraid. Then he called out to the bull demon as follows. You fool! What do you think you're doing, you wicked vassal, fighting the cowherd community of animals when I am here just to punish corrupt miscreants like you? Without moving it, Krishna slapped his arm with his palms, further angering Arisha with a loud sound. Then, appearing most attractive, he casually threw his mighty serpent-pointed arm over Sridhar's shoulder and stood facing the demon, smiling in casual disrespect. What kind of a big man are you? Thus provoked Arisha fell to the ground with one of his wounds, and then, with the clouds hovering around his upraised tail, furiously he charged Krishna. Pointing the tips of his horns straight ahead, and glaring menacingly at Lord Krishna from the corners of his bloodshot eyes, Arisha rushed toward him at full speed like a thunderbolt hurled by Indra. This is the kind of a Dharma folks attacking Krishna. Or the kind of a Dharma tendency within any one of us with regard to Krishna. Will finish Krishna. Whereas Krishna is like negative. The Supreme Lord Krishna seized Krishna by the horns and threw him back 18 steps. Just as an elephant might do when fighting a rival elephant. Take them up and throw them in the air. 18 lengths. Although the demon was perspiring and appeared very tired, he took courage and got up. Again, he charged Krishna with great force and anger. Repulsed by the Supreme Lord, the bull demon got up with a freezing heart, sweating all over his body, charging in mindless rage. While rushing towards Krishna, he breathed very heavily. You can see the air coming out of his nostrils. Whoops. Krishna again caught his horns and immediately threw him to the ground. Then he uprooted his left horn and beat his head with it, as if the horn were Yamaraja's staff. As Arisha attacked, Lord Krishna seized him by the horn and knocked him to the ground with his foot. Being thus kicked by Krishna, Arisha rolled onto his back and began to move his legs violently. The Lord then thrashed him as if he were a wet cloth. Finally yanked out one of the demon's horns and struck him with it until he left his human body. Vomiting blood and profusely excreting stool and urine, kicking his leg and rolling his eyes about Arisha, thus went painfully to the abode of death. The demigods honored Lord Krishna by scattering flowers upon him. Now there's a comment by our acharyas, I think this is Vishnu, that says he went painfully to the abode of death, the lord of death, Yamaraj. But he comments that after the second canto, it says the demons, thus being killed, would attain either impersonal Brahmajyoti or his personal abode in the life of the planets. Well, because Krishna killed Arishta, he was liberated. But he was, the commentator says, Shukadeva Goswami had such disdain for Arishta, he spoke like that. Here's Arishta charging, here's Arishta getting snatched. And here's the cows and the cowherd boys running here for Arishta syrup. And a painting that shows the whole pastime. Here's Arishta coming charging, Krishna grabs him by the horn, Krishna breaks the horn off, and Krishna starts smashing him with his own horns. When Rishisura is killed, Krishna and Balaram, at the end of the afternoon, they go back home to Vraja. Krishna was already the life and soul of the inhabitants of Vrindavan, and after killing the demon in the shape of a bull, he became the cynosure of all eyes. Krishna's back now in Vraja. So there's a section that I'm not going to cover because, well, having thus killed the bull demon Arishta, he who was a festival for the gopis' eyes entered the cowherd village with Balaram. There's a section here that gives a little description of who Arishtasura was in his previous lifetime. He was a student of Brahaspati, this is Brahaspati, and here he was sticking his feet out in front of Brahaspati, and Brahaspati noted this is very uncivilized. He said, you should sit like a bull sits, you should become a bull. So he became a bull. And specifically mentions, this is Garga Samhita, a bull at East Bengal. I know what it is, Brahaspati is from East Bengal. And finally killed by Krishna was freed from the curse. So this is the Chidi religion message here. And some other slides. So next, Keshi assumed the form of a horse,
and he wasn't like a regular horse.
He's huge,
and he's one of the favorite associates of and assistants of Kamsa. The way Balaram reads is, after the killing of Rishtasura, Nara went to see Kamsa. But as I mentioned, it happened much later. The pastime of Krishna killing Rishtasura took place in the springtime. And because that's where Krishna has Rasalila both in the autumn, in the Sharad season, and in the spring season. In the spring season, Kamalila, Rasalila will be performed by a place near Govardhan Hill. And Keshi was killed the following year on the Chaturdashi day of Shivaratri. So So our acharya is described like that. So although it says after Arishasura has been killed by Krishna, Narada went to speak to Kinikamsa, who is self-animated. Because after Arishasura was killed, that's when Radhakund and Shamakund were created. Then the Ravivas performed at Radhakund and Shamakund and many things. So it was self-animated. But Narada
went to visit Kamsa, and he had a purpose.
His purpose was he wanted to hasten Krishna's, the purpose of Krishna's appearance, which was to come to this world and kill the demoniac king, but he was only killing the demons that were sent by Kamsa one by one. There were so many other demoniac kings to be relieved. So to hasten that pastime of Krishna's entering, reading Vrindavan and coming to kill the other demons, the other demoniac kings, he went to visit Kamsa. And although Kamsa was a demon, what made him a demon was what? He was averse to Krishna. But one of the things that he was part of Kamsa's program is when the Brahmana would come, he got the Brahmana. Jarasandha did the same thing. He honored Brahmanas because he wanted to punya for honoring Brahmanas so he could do demoniac things. So he honored Narada very, very nicely, and Narada said, "You please me very much, this nice reception. I'm going to disclose something to you." "What's that?" "You know very well that it was the eighth child of Devaki that was prophesied to kill you. Well, that eighth child of Devaki is Krishna. Vasudev tricked you. When the eighth child of Devaki was born, he took the eighth child of Devaki to the other side of the world, the whole thing, to the other side of the universe, and he was afraid of your atrocious activities. And so Balaram is also there, and Krishna is also there, and they're both sons of Vasudev and Devaki, and he's the one that prophesied to kill you. And not only that, but every one of the demons that you sent him to various destruction, it was Krishna and Balaram that killed every one of them. So you better watch your back side." And immediately Kamsa drew his sword. "What's that? I'm going to kill Vasudev. He lied to me. He deceived me. I thought he was honest. He brought every one of his children. But he's dishonest. The eighth child of Devaki is the one that's going to kill me. He didn't disclose that." And Narada said, "That's, you put your sword away. There's no need for you to kill Vasudev. He's not going to harm you. It's the eighth child of Devaki. That's what we should do. We should make an arrangement to kill Krishna Balaram. You're a very smart man. You know how to do that. See you later, Kamsa." So Kamsa immediately called for his best associate, Keshi, and one other demon to go together and try to kill Krishna and Balaram. And then he also, this is Narada going to visit Kamsa, and then Kamsa arranging for his various ministers. So this is the plan making of Kamsa. First we see Chandra and Mushtika, that's these two guys here, to arrange for a wrestling match. And this is Kubhayapita, his elephant, and some of his other buddies over here. And here's Keshi going off to take care of kill Krishna. And here's Kamsa instructing others, how to make arrangements to destroy Krishna. And he's beginning his discussion with the Kura. Kamsa is discussing with the Kura for a Kura to go and bring Krishna. I just want to read how Kamsa's mind works, in case you were interested. He called for Kura, one of the descendants of the family of Yadu in which Krishna was born, as the son of Vasudeva. When Akura came to see Kamsa, Kamsa very politely shook his hand and said, "My dear Akura, actually I have no better friend than you in the Bhoja and Yadu dynasties. You are the most munificent person." Oh, flattery. "So, as a friend, I'm begging charity from you. Actually, I have taken shelter of you exactly as King Indra takes shelter of Lord Vishnu." Flattery. "I request you to go immediately to Vrindavan and find the two boys named Krishna and Balaram. They are the sons of Nanda Maharaj. Take this nice chariot, especially prepared for the boys, and bring them here immediately. This is my request to you. Now, my plan is to kill these two boys. As soon as they come to the gate, there'll be a giant elephant named Kulayapita awaiting them, and possibly he'll be able to kill them. But if somehow or other they escape, they will next meet the wrestlers and will be killed by them. That is my plan. And after killing these two boys, I shall kill Vasudeva and Nanda, who are the supporters of the Rishi and Bhoja dynasties. I shall also kill my father, Udrasena, and his brother, Devakala, because they are actually my enemies and are hindrances to my diplomacy and politics. Thus I shall get rid of all my enemies." Recognize this from Bhagavad Gita? Divine and demoniac nature. Ishwaro Hong Hong Hongi. "Jarasandha is my father-in-law and I have a great monkey friend named Dvidvita. With their help, it will be easy to kill all the kings on the surface of the earth who support the demigods. This is my plan. In this way, I shall be free from all opposition and it will be very pleasant to rule the world without obstruction. You may know also that Shambhara, Navakasura and Banasura are my intimate friends, and when I begin this war against the kings who support the demigods, they will help me considerably. Surely I'll be rid of all my enemies. Please go immediately to Vrindavan and encourage the boys to come here to see the beautiful beauty of Mathura and take pleasure
in the wrestling competition."
So Kura is a devotee. And he's hearing Kamsa reveal his plan to kill Krishna this way, that way, his father, and all this stuff. So here's the Kura. "My dear king, your plan is very excellently made to counteract the hindrances to your diplomatic activities. But you should maintain equilibrium, for the result of your activities may be fruitful or may not be fruitful. After all, man proposes, God disposes. We may make great plans, but unless they are sanctioned by the supreme authority, they will fail. Everyone in this material world knows that the supernatural power is the ultimate disposer of everything." But he's a devotee, and Kamsa's not.
So Kamsa has this excellent plan, and as soon as given the instruction by Kamsa to go kill Krishna, Keshi assumed this giant form, big horse, running into the sea of the mind, he tore up the earth of his wounds. The hairs of his mane scattered clouds, so big he was, and the demigod's airplanes threw up the sky. That's how his name is. Keshi. And Keshi is here, and Keshi is one who possesses hairs. Big ones. He terrified everyone present with his loud name. That's the sound of the horse's name. Keshi made the earth tremble
with the stomping of tools. He shook the clouds with his tail as he was charging about searching for Krishna. Hearing the words of the people, "Save us! Save us!" that they call Krishna, Krishna. Krishna spoke in a voice deep as thunderclouds. "Do not fear, O cowherds. Why do you have fear of Keshi? Because of him, your courage has disappeared? What use is this wicked horse which has no strength, is proud and gallops around, taking strength from his demons?" The Keshi demon does not waste any time causing distress to the inhabitants. He went all over the things of anger, running in fear as he was charging here and there. So Krishna comes in direct front of Keshi, praising the situation. The residents of Vrindavan thought that Krishna was an ordinary person, like them. So they were thinking of his safety. This is from Hari Hamachan. "Oh Krishna, do not approach that wicked horse. You are a child, and he is unconquerable. He is Kamsa's original life heir in external form. He is the best of the king of horses. Incomparable in fighting, he causes fear in armies. Is the strongest of horses, cannot be killed by any being. It is the greatest sinner." So apparently there are different forms of Keshi, there are different pastimes of Krishna. This one in Harivamsa indicates he is compared to the moon because his complexion is white, but the other verb is like a cloud. When the Supreme Personality Godhead saw the beam was frightening the village of Gokula by name, terribly shaking the clouds with his tail, the Lord came forward to meet him. Keshi was searching for Krishna to fight. So the Lord stood before him, challenging him to approach. The horse responded, roaring like a lion. Seeing the Lord standing before him, Keshi ran towards him in extreme rage, his mouth gaping as if to swallow the sky. With eyes like blooming lotuses, Krishna glanced at the demon in casual disrespect, same as he did with Krishna, just like, "Who are you?" Rushing with such a furious speed, Keshi was difficult to conquer. The unapproachable horse demon tried to strike the other side of the Lord with his two front legs. Since he is beyond the knowledge of the senses, Adhokshita, how could Keshi strike him? Result? The transcendental Lord dodged Keshi's blow. When Keshi kicked with his hind legs, Krishna again dodged him. Angry because the demon had spread fear and grudge, Krishna seized Keshi's extended hind legs with his hands, whirled them around in the air, and contemptuously threw him 600 feet away. Astonishingly, Krishna did all this while standing in one place, landing with a crash. Keshi fainted. Upon regaining consciousness, Keshi angrily got up, opened his mouth wide, and again rushed to attack Krishna. Krishna just laughed, showed his left thumb, and said, "Do you want something to eat? Here, eat this." Oops. Just as a curious person may put a snake into a mouse hole without fear of mishap. Krishna thrusts his left fist into Keshi's mouth, which represented his life here. So his teeth were hard as thunderbolts and huge. Keshi's teeth immediately fell out, separated from their roots when they touched the Supreme Lord's arm, which to the demon felt as hot as molten iron. Krishna Chakravarti Thakur points out that although Lord Krishna's arm is more tender and cooling than a blue lotus, to Keshi it felt extremely hot, as if made of lightning bolt. There's some of the talent boys trying to help Krishna. Is it Krishna needed help? The hand and arm of the Lord expanded within Keshi's whole mouth very quickly, unseen by others. As his fist expanded, the path of air within Keshi's body was completely blocked. As Lord Krishna's standing arm completely blocked Keshi's breathing, his legs kicked convulsively, his body became covered with sweat, and his eyes rolled around. The demon then passed through and fell to the ground dead. Krishna expanded his arm till Keshi's body burst. In this way, the demon died. And one of the acharyas writes like this: as with the disease of untreated indigestion, where the patient suffers greatly, the stomach may suddenly expand within the body, which can cause a person's sudden death. The death of Keshi was similar. Upon the death of Keshi, the mighty armed Krishna withdrew his arm from Keshi's body, which now appeared like a long karkatika fruit. If you don't know what one of those are, the Vishnu Purana describes it this way: Keshi's body is split into two parts, each part with 2 feet, half a back, half a tail, one ear, one eye, and one nostril. Like Jarasandha got rid of the head. Without the least display of pride, and having so effortlessly killed his enemy, the Lord accepted the demigod's worship in the form of flowers raining from above. He sprinkled flowers and 5 drops of water to dispel Krishna's defeat. Here is the demigod stopping flowers and 5 drops of water. Though he had effortlessly killed the enemy, Krishna did not feel pride mixed with astonishment, thinking, I killed him. And here's, whoops, the demigods come to offer their prayers and their honors to Krishna. When Keshi was killed, the cowherd boys and gopis were astonished. They praised lotus eyed Krishna, attracted with Anurag. Then Krishna went home. Seeing Keshi dead, the cowherd men and their wives were overjoyed. They were free of all obstacles and fatigue. They welcomed beautiful Krishna according to age and place, with pleasing words, and worshipping him again and again. So they knew the art of how, according to their position, to honor Krishna. Of course, in their case, it's not just etiquette, it's ecstasy. And for us, we do etiquette. There's appropriate ways to honor different persons according to our position and according to their position. That's culture. But in Braja, it's just spontaneous love. So this little review.
To come to the position of attracting Krishna's attention, we just have to call out for him feelingly. Because Krishna, that's not only the act of calling, but it's the feeling with which we call. And if we feelingly call out for Krishna's shelter, because there's a mood of humility and there's a mood of recognizing that we need Krishna's kindness, and so we're calling out in the mood of taking shelter of him, Krishna extends his shelter. And if whatever impurities or obstacles in our own hearts that may remain, not may, that do remain, Krishna will help us. Personally, Krishna will help us to become free from those obstacles. And one of the things that we can do to take Krishna's help is to read Krishna book or read Srimad Bhagavatam. Because by reading Krishna book and reading Srimad Bhagavatam, we're hearing about Krishna and Krishna's prowess. And those very same tendencies, obstacle-wise, within our own hearts, will be eradicated. The power is there for that to happen. Just as by reading Bhagavad Gita, and Arjuna addressing Krishna in various ways, Rishikesh and Janardana, Madhusudana, and Kishisudana, and so forth. That there's potency in each of these names. So, read Bhagavad Gita again and again. Recite these messages again and again. Remember them, share them with others, and pray to Krishna for his protection from our own shortcomings and our own weaknesses, our own impurities. This is our bhakti process. So that it strengthens and enriches our relationship with the holy name of Krishna. What do you think? Nice process? I'm thinking again of this nice Jewish lady that, as far as relationship with Krishna and love for Krishna and service to Krishna, it's not even part of her religion. How fortunate we are. How fortunate we are. Even if we don't know what these things are, we're hearing them and getting benefited in that way. What to speak of, as a little progress is made, we start to understand what's being offered to us, the gifts that's being offered to us. By Lord Chaitanya. Love for Krishna in the most intimate form has found the realm of Goloka Vrindavan. Raja Prema is being extended to us. How fortunate. See what that gift is and receive it carefully, gratefully. Any comments or questions? I'm not used to this from our Seattle group here. I don't have any questions. Yes. Take the microphone over there, please.
So you described the quality of Ramana, and when you described the rest of the story of women, the bull. And so I was curious what the metaphor is for Kishi as far as quality of Ramana.
For persons who?
Well, first you described the rest of the story.
Yeah.
qualities? You're asking what those qualities are?
Within ourselves or within the world?
Within ourselves, what duplication do you represent?
Within ourselves. Keshi, Arista, or both?
Keshi.
Keshi? Okay, let's go there. Oh, this is a nice slide. In Brihadbhagavatamrita, there is a pastime in which it plays out in a different way. Krishna paints him. He jumps up, he mounts Keshi, and he domesticates him, rather than killing him with his mouth and his hand in his mouth. Then he has his cowherd boyfriend come and join him, and they play horsey right in there. And then Krishna keeps him in a corral somewhere, so that from time to time he can go back and go for a ride. This is described in Brihadbhagavatamrita. This is Keshi Ghat, where the pastime takes place, along the side of the river Jamuna. This is who he is in his previous site. Let's skip that part. Keshi Dila represents tendency to think that I'm a great devotee. See, his brain is wired. Because that's what happens in the pastime. There's this student or servant of King Indra who has all these, you know, beauty and this and that, and he's this parasol carrier. And during Ashwamedha Yagya, he liked the horse, and he took the horse and ran away with the horse. And so Indra sent somebody after him, the Maruts after him, caught him, and Indra cursed him to become a horse. He became a horse. So he was thinking, you know, like, why should Indra enjoy the yajna? I'm pretty good. Why should he enjoy the horse? Here's a story. Once upon a time. Yeah, this is the one. There was a young student, archer, who became so expert that he began to boast that he was a greater archer than his guru. And one day, knowing that tendency of his disciple, the guru took him on a journey and went to the hills and he came to a chasm. There was just a log crossing the chasm. The guru crossed the log. And while standing in the middle of the log, he took an arrow from his bow and shot it into the tree that was on the other side of the chasm. And he took another arrow and split that arrow in two. Then he came back and threw it to Mount Durga. See if he can match what I did. And when the students went out to the middle of the log, they got really scared. If I make a wrong step, I'm finished. So he called out to his guru self and he realized I'm actually dependent upon my guru. That's like one of these common stories. So there's a tendency when I learn a little something, and that little something that I learn, I think now I'm a big man or a big, you know, big devotee. I've been practicing Christian consciousness for so many years now, and I, you know, should be respected by other people. And so forth and so on. So, the hankering for being respected for something, that's the tendency within ourselves. In case you've got a big time. He was challenging Krishna directly. So the Purna Mushika Baba story, this is what the kids in school should learn. You know this one, right? Amalas came before a Brahmin and said, how about my cat? And a cat's chasing me. Can you, or would you like to become a cat? So he became a cat.
Then he came back and said, "Help, help, what's the problem?" The dog is chasing you. So you become a dog. Then the lion was chasing the dog, so he became a lion. Then he looked at the guru and was licking his chops, saying, "What's this? You want to eat me?" He said, "Yes, okay, you become a mouse again." Who now worship the dog? If the saintly person has the power to make us from mouse to tiger, then he can convert us again from tiger to mouse. We get power afterwards by the grace of Lord Krishna, and if we misuse it, then we again become greedy. What does it say here? We're not worship of God. Okay. Okay, does that answer your question? Okay.
Yes. Yes, and the thing that you mentioned, I just have to know to be false religion. So I'm trying to see how those tendencies manifest in the yogis, and in the sense of how the I don't know
whether
the
devotee
can be outright
like
Krishna, because they're trying to be
servant
of Krishna.
Trying to be religious, like, you know, following without really taking shelter of Krishna.
Okay,
and the pomp and splendor of following without really taking shelter of Krishna. The essence is taking shelter of Krishna, it's not the externals. And some persons would show through the externals, and then if you go further and further and further, because altogether false religion. Sometimes devotees turn on Krishna. At some point they get bumped in the head and they think, you know, Krishna's bad. Devotee. This happens. That tendency. Yes. Yeah.
Actually, designed for respect in how to, in the normal daily life.
Could you turn the speaker so I can hear better? The speaker, just turn the speaker. Just turn it this way. Directionally. Okay, try again.
Designed for respect in the day-to-day life, when we associate with the devotee, though we don't have any desire for respect from others, but sometimes we feel sad when we are ignored by the devotee. So suppose if I go with somebody and some devotee comes and they say Hare Krishna to my friend, and if they don't say Hare Krishna to me, I feel so sad about that. Does this really mean that I expect respect from them or something like that?
Yes.
So you should not feel sad or bad. It's very hard right now, Maharaj.
Okay, she's still there.
Okay, she's still
there. Go to that devotee and give them a strong Hare Krishna. And if it happens again, you go and give them a strong Hare Krishna again. Just be their friend.
She's
being honest, but I can tell you, I hear this all the time. It's all the time. It's not, you know, it's not occasional here and there. It's all the time. But it, you know, it's our shortcoming. If we have shelter in Krishna, we're complete. And whatever's going on out there, it's temporary. And when we have real shelter in Krishna, the other is inconsequential. We want to have nice relationships with everybody.
We want to have nice relationships with, as much as we can, nice relationships. So be that kind of person that invites nice relationships rather than, oh, I'm going to say Hare Krishna. And you feel that. That's exactly what's being spoken about. I think it's a version of what's being spoken about. And then, you know, you carry that feeling. And then, you know, it may go over there that, you know, that complaint about that person. You know, you may say, you don't say it, you may feel it. And it makes disruption in what's pleasing to Krishna. What's pleasing to Krishna, we don't attend to those things. We just act in service to Krishna, that's all. Whatever. And that's our position, that's our happiness. That's what's pleasing to Krishna. But it makes us happy, it makes him happy, and that's our life. Thank you for sharing that, honestly. Something else? Okay. I don't know what we're going to do with this question. Go ahead.
Maharaj, I find myself in a similar situation as you, where I'm doing some free eating and yoga studios,
yeah.
And to a similar audience where they don't want to hear the word Krishna. It's almost like a turn off.
Yeah.
But there's preaching opportunities and more almost like value education.
Yes.
And I'm wondering if you could give a few good home run examples that you'd like to use in that situation.
Well, sure. Here's two. Speak about something that they can relate with, and so then they get warm. Like, you know, compassion or nonviolence or something. There's a one presentation that I do that's contemporary expressions of compassion. And, you know, halfway, let's say half an hour into the thing, everybody's really comfortable. Because it's saying exactly what they resonate with. And then comes how Krishna speaks to Arjuna about compassion. So, you know, have all these other people speaking about compassion, and Krishna speaks about compassion. And, you know, depending upon your audience and how much you've interacted with them, you can speak about, you know, how the Mahamantra is compassionate and Lord Chaitanya is very compassionate. They're giving this Mahamantra because people in yoga studios know about Kirtana, but they don't know what it is. And it's an expression of compassion. But we're asking for Krishna's kindness upon them. So that's one thing. Another, well, this is a long story made really short, is something that happened at Gidanagari with a group of students from Penn State. We invited Brother Hari and Hari Kirtan, who teaches yoga in Washington, D.C., to come to a Kirtan yoga retreat. And although it said Kirtan Yoga Retreat, a big banner across the entrance, the main entrance archway going into Penn State University early in September, they all came with their, you know, yoga mats and leotards ready for yoga time. So we sat down, Brother Hari singing, you know, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. They were looking at each other going, you know, I'm out here. One of them leaned over to each other, it's just about God. I'm leaving tonight. So we can get the vibration. So we did a little timeout. I said, we understand you want that, not this. No problem. We're here to serve you. We'll give you that, not this. You're going to change your schedule completely. So Hari Kirtan did the yoga thing. And then he moved to the next one called Vinyasa Yoga. It's moving yoga. Then chanting Om, you know, sound chanting with the yoga, and, you know, moving. And by the evening, they're completely relaxed. The evening before, was I'm out of here, and by that evening, they're completely relaxed. You know, it was in the temple, we had the deity, you know, closed. They figured it out. There's something behind those doors. So they can hear a little bell, you know. They figured it out, but they were okay. And by the last kirtan, by the evening, was then with kirtan again, kirtan yoga. And without having ever seen devotees dance, they got up and started dancing. And they did it the same way, you know, in circles and the whole thing. And then, you know, he ended, and they went, same as devotees do, more. So he, you know, more. So that's another, just give them what they want, and when they're ready, they'll dance. So, you know, to what extent they understood what they were doing, we didn't give them philosophy, it was just yoga, and I don't know exactly what Hari Kirtan said, but maybe it had to do with the, you know, the moving yoga, along with the sitting yoga. So, you can ask Hari Kirtan, find out his contact information, and he's in Washington, D.C., and he's accomplished at it. So that's the third, that you just, other people that are doing the same thing, you do a little networking and finding how do they make that bridge, how to make it look, you know, inviting to walk on. Mainly it's relationship and trust with the person. It's mainly the thing. And then you'll know. You could say at another night we're going to do that. Anyone that's interested, otherwise just do what you're comfortable with on the other nights, the regular nights. Someone else? Okay.
Thank you very much. I have a similar question, but it is directed more to the public. So it's not a particular tendency, but just like you said, there is this understanding, and I practice it in my practice, of giving people what they want at first, and then later giving them what they really need.
Mm-hmm.
And so I am also uncomfortable with having to substitute softer names for Krishna, like universe, the supreme, the creator, etc. And then when I pose that against what Prabhupada teaches is to preach boldly, I find a conundrum there. So I wondered if you could share some of the ways in which you, in your discomfort right now, are achieving
Well, a short answer is different people have different styles or and for different personalities. And depending upon those styles, they should be themselves and let the chips fall where they may. You know, it's a different stroke for different folks. So, I don't think, you know, what I'm saying here is, it's not there's a one approach is the approach, and other approaches don't work. Rather, that which you have a deep feeling for, do that. And some persons are going to be attracted, and some persons aren't. You do the other, and some persons are going to be attracted, some persons aren't. But be genuine to your heart and your inspiration and your sensitivity. You don't want, on the one hand, but on the other hand. You don't want people to run away in the other direction. On the other hand, you don't want them to stay forever and, you know, nowhere land. You want them to come to, you know, toward Krishna. So if that's in your heart, and you're looking within your heart for the opportunity and the right, you know, with the right sensitivity to the person and the dynamic and so forth. Just like here's an example. Bhakti Tirtha Swami was sharing with me in the last month that he was kind of visiting him. And Kabir was just standing behind him doing his, you know, care, health care thing, hospice care. So Bhakti Tirtha Swami was describing the indirect method he used. And at a certain point in time, Kamal Krishna Maharaj said, you know, you have this idea about a farm, a rural, sustainable agriculture. Kedanagar needs help. Why don't you take your team and go there? So he took that as coming from Krishna. And then Krishna came out of the box. He turned to Ekavir and said, did you have any idea that at that point in time, the farm we were going to was a Hare Krishna farm? And Ekavir shook his head and said, no, no idea. But he gave up, you know, whatever it was, a very substantial paying job, to just go with Bhakti Tirtha Swami and do whatever, you know, do this sustainable agriculture thing. So based on relationship. The one who's very sensitive to the relationships, yet in their heart they want to go to Krishna and take others to Krishna. Krishna will provide the means. It's relationship based and faith based and intuition based, and it's very needed. Okay. I'm going to end. And it's time for, we're half an hour over schedule. Yes? According to our schedule, I was supposed to be done at 5 o'clock, right? There's kirtan from 5 to 5:30. So, it's now 5:30. Kirtan till 6. Is that good? You got your kirtan team ready? Okay.